thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Here we go.
Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's John. We are in the Allstate Skyline Showcase Corner Performance Studio. We're here until 3 on WGN. All right, gang, this is your cue now. In 3, 2, 1, let's hear it from our studio audience. We're featuring a little of the sort of Mexican Christmas music underneath and in the background as we open up this segment of the show. We are back in Chicago, Elif and I and Sarah Tiemann from our staff and Bill Murdoch, our chief engineer, were all in Mexico last week broadcasting from the Iberostar Resort. That was a lot of fun. It was a great location. We had a really good time. But, you know, you do kind of get anxious to get back to Chicago and see your friends like Steve Bertrand, even though he doesn't appreciate the gifts you give him when you come back with a chocolate bar from Mexico. I was literally thinking, what would Steve like? Tabasco sauce, vanilla, tequila, chocolate. These are some of the staples from Mexico. And then I thought, oh, all of those are so cliche, I'll get him nothing, which is kind of original. And then I finally broke down and got him a chocolate bar. So it's good to be back in the studio. In this hour, we're going to visit with Lee Steinberg, The Agent. That's the title of his book, the super agent that was portrayed by Tom Cruise in the movie Jerry Maguire. And we have an audience that you can tell. Some of them have paid a donation to the Salvation Army as a way of saying thank you to the Army for what they do, and kind of a nice gesture by Mr. Steinberg's part to sort of make himself available for this purpose. Sitting next to us over here, stage left, is Lieutenant Colonel Charles Smith. He is the Metro Divisional Commander. Charles, welcome to the show. Nice to see you again.
Thanks, John. It's good to be with you today.
What are you guys going to do with the money that we raise today and through the holidays?
All the money that we raise here in Chicago stays right here in Chicago to help our community. And so it'll help to feed the hungry, to be able to house the homeless, and to meet the general needs of people.
I say that you guys do it all year long, every day, every hour of every day. If there's a cause you're into, is it hunger? Is it substance abuse? Is it shelter? Is it gifts for kids? The Army's probably working on that right now, but they don't ask for money to help, but really between Thanksgiving and Christmas Day.
Yes, between those time periods, 70% of all of the money that we raise from the public comes in at Christmas time. And so we need people to help support our agency right now in order for us to help serve the people of our community.
Before we visit with Lee, just give me a short answer to what's the biggest area of need for the Salvation Army in Chicago?
Well, the biggest area of need continues to be helping serve our homeless population. That takes part of a lot of things. It's feeding them, clothing them, helping them to find a way of getting over the barriers that have brought them into homelessness. And so that's one of the key areas of support that we're doing.
I hope people understand, as I do a little bit, that you guys aren't just a Band-Aid either. We see you as a cup of coffee when there's a fire, or a shelter when somebody finds themselves helpless or homeless. But you don't just end it there. You say, okay, how can we get you back on your feet? How can we break you from the habit of alcohol or drugs? How can we find you a job? I mean, the Army's a comprehensive organization.
That's true. In fact, a great example exists here in Chicago, where we have just built the Shield of Hope, which is the launching pad for any homeless family that here in Chicago, that's the place they start with. And right across the street is our Freedom Center, which provides all the support service. Kids can go across for after-school programs, use a community center. Parents can go in and learn about how to get jobs. And then we also have our Drug and Alcohol Rehabilitation Center there as well.
Lieutenant Colonel Charles Smith from the Salvation Army, put your hands together and let's thank him for what he's doing for the people of Chicago. So the agent, Lee Steinberg, has represented 300 pro athletes, 60 first-round picks, the number one pick a record 8 times. He has, under his tutelage, MLB All-Stars, NBA All-Stars, whose charitable efforts, including his own, have amounted to now more than $700 million themselves, the recipient of 4 presidential commendations. Lee, welcome to the show. Welcome to Chicago.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We're glad that you're also here. You are here for us today, and we appreciate that. You were in town yesterday for the Packers game, right?
Yes.
You represented three guys on the other side of the ball, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
And
nope.
Lived to tell about it.
I know. Well, we're just so happy you're here. That was a good game.
It was a great game. And I really feel good that the Bears are back. This town is a football town in many ways. And I had players like Jim Harbaugh, who was able to survive Mike Ditka. And it's good to see people happy.
I read your book while I was on break, and there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but you brought up Jim Harbaugh. You said he survived Ditka. He also survived Ted Phillips. Talk a little bit about Phillips did not want to sign Harbaugh, or did, but he didn't want to pay him the amount of money. That's the business you guys are in. And you're back and forth, back and forth. He can't report to camp unless he has a contract. And Ditka will be furious if Harbaugh doesn't have a contract and in camp on day one. You know how crazy Ditka was. Imagine how mad Ditka was if this hotshot quarterback we got isn't here. Where do these rookies get off? And that's your guy. And you guys can't come to terms with Phillips. So what did you guys do to break the ice with the management of the Bears when you were trying to get a deal done for Harbaugh?
So we knew that the minute that Mike Ditka went ballistic, there would be nuclear fission above training camp. So we had to get this done quickly. So we got in the car, jumped up, and simply drove to training camp without a contract. Now, this would not be appropriate today with everything that's happened with guns, but we took submachine guns like we were water pistols.
Oh, you had water guns,
yes.
That looked like machine guns.
That looked like Al Capone in the Roaring Twenties, and we busted into his office.
You and Jim Harbaugh.
Yes, and doused him.
And well, that's an either this had better work or this had better not work.
Exactly.
And
it worked.
This worked.
So we were able to break the impasse, and we're able to avoid the nuclear explosion of the head coach.
Speaking of deals with the Bears, how good is the Khalil Mack deal?
It is one of the great trades in NFL history, because if you had 10 number one draft picks, you might never find a Khalil Mack. He is a generational player who completely transforms a defense and creates opportunity that you can't get any other way.
Why did they let him go?
John Gruden looked to be reshaping that roster, but that question will go down in history
as
an imponderable.
If you were representing Mac, and you're not, right?
Right.
You are representing some of the marquee players in the NFL right now, including the quarterback for the Chiefs, right?
Right.
What would you have said to Mac when the Bears came calling?
Probably that this is your ticket out of prison.
And really?
Chicago is the third biggest city in the country. It's football crazy.
We didn't know how good we were going to be this year. It seems like we've had potential for a while. But you would have said go?
Absolutely. If you have a winning Chicago Bear team in Chicago, the world's your oyster.
Yeah, this is a town that loves the 85 Bears still.
Still. I was involved in a roast for Richard Dent with Willie Gault in the Fridge a couple years ago, and people are still passionate. So I've had players here from 1976 with Dan Jiggetts and then Ted Albrecht, and this town loves pro football.
I've heard it said, maybe you agree with this, that baseball is America's pastime, but football is America's passion. It's the game people care the most about.
Well, by 2-1, every poll shows NFL football is the most popular sport, but it also is the most popular form of televised entertainment. Totally. So many weeks, 5 of the top 10 Nielsen-rated shows, 15 of the top 30 shows in September are nighttime NFL games. It means it outranks every other form of entertainment.
If I say Jerry Maguire, what line comes to mind? What's a scene? What's a line? Yes.
Show me the money.
help me help you. You had me at hello. Let's do help me help you, Elif. Hit it.
I am out here for you. You don't know what it's like to be me out here for you. It is an up at dawn, pride swallowing siege that I will never fully tell you about, okay? God, help me! Help me, Rod. Help me help you. Help me help you. Help me help you. You are hanging on by a very thin thread. And I dig that about you.
I dig that about you, Jerry Maguire. I dig that about you. How realistic was that scene?
Pretty realistic. Cameron Crowe, the director-writer of Jerry Maguire, called me up in 93, asked if he could follow me around to pick up atmosphere for a film he'd do about a sports agent. So he started following me, and this went on a good year and a half to the NFL draft in 93, where I had the first pick, Drew Bledsoe, to the press conference with Bill Parcells that followed, came for a week to the league meetings where I had a big free agent, pro scouting day at SC, a number of games. He went everywhere I went. And then I told him stories, lots and lots of stories. And most of them found their way into the script. I had to vet the script, and then I had to work with the actors. So I took Cuba Gooding Jr. with me down to the Super Bowl in Arizona and made him pretend he was my wide receiver client all week. And I even had to show the quarterback, played by Jerry O'Connell, how to throw a spiral.
Cush, yes.
Yeah. Because he had gone to NYU and they didn't have a football program.
Don't you hate that in sports movies when you go, you're not an athlete? Kevin Costner's a good athlete. When Costner plays a pitcher in baseball or something, so he does incredibly.
So I was technical advisor on For the Love of the Game.
I love that movie. And he looked the part.
He pitched. He did all his own pitching. He actually was a pitcher at Cal State Fullerton. So anyway, I had to work with the actors, and I've never walked anywhere in public over the last 21 years where someone didn't come up and ask me to say four words.
Show me the money.
Yeah.
Or help me help you. Or you had me at hello. Although some of those are your lines, some of those are not.
Or I mean, human brain weighs 800 pounds.
Yes. It's such a great... I'll tell you what, literally, so we're watching clips, and I'm going, oh, I'm going to watch this movie tonight. It's one of those films where when you're dialing around, you can't turn it off because you go, oh, but the next scene is so good, I'll watch that. But the next scene is so good, I'll watch that. Too bad for you because you've had a life and career of your own. If they'd never made the movie, you'd still be hot stuff. But now people think of you as well for Tom Cruise, the way he portrayed you in Jerry Maguire. Did you ever say, help me help you?
No.
Or show me the money? I mean, not that that was your line anyway.
No, the athlete says to me, show me the money.
So that wouldn't have come from you anyway.
No, that came from Tim McDonald, who was a strong safety, and he was sitting upstairs at the league meetings, and Cameron Crowe asked him what he was looking for in free agency, and Lou Dobbs was on CNN in the background, and Tim gestured towards the screen, and he said, I'm looking for someone to show me respect. I'm looking for someone to show me winning. I'm looking for someone to show me the money.
Yeah. And Crowe picks up on that, and that line kind of lives on. And then there's that scene, though, where you're losing all of your clients left and right, and you're on with Cuba Gooding's Sam Tidwell character, and that's where he's making you say, show me the money. And it's just this desperate moment where you're watching your entire franchise evaporate on a phone bank in front of you as you get tied up with Tidwell. There is a scene in the book in your real life where somebody tried to raid your client list and kind of stole some of your guys, right? I wonder if he was thinking of one when he did
that's,
the other.
So that's what I gave to Cameron. And or I gave him that my biggest fear in the draft would be that I had Drew Bledsoe, but suppose his father was actually dealing with somebody else, and I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning and find out I don't have the first pick in the draft.
And that scene survived in the movie, too.
Yes.
So some of it were your worst nightmares. Some of them were things that actually happened to you. It's not a biography, the movie, but it does ring like you in a lot of ways. I mean, you wonder if there would be that movie or if it would have felt as authentic if it had not been for you.
Well, the problem with it being biographical is I started in 1975 with the very first pick in the first round of the NFL draft, and we got the biggest contract of all time. That doesn't give you the arc that you need out of the ashes.
I guess so, right. You didn't build it up tiny bit by tiny bit. You didn't have some little-known wide receiver for the Cardinals.
No, no.
You had the first-round pick as a 26-year-old operating out of a card table in your parents' basement.
Yes.
And you land that guy because he was kind of a friend of yours. He wasn't happy with how things were going. So Steve Barkowski says, why don't you represent me? Like, let's go to the store or something. and the rest, although, but then it wasn't a gravy train for you after that. I mean, you did struggle for a while.
I did. And what I discovered was I needed to figure out how to profile someone that would be amenable to what I was offering, because the second year was really difficult.
We'll pick it up here in just a minute. Lee Steinberg is here. His book is The Agent. It's been out a couple years, a New York Times bestseller. It's a paperback. If you got somebody that likes sports or particularly football, of course, The Agent, my 40-year career making deals and changing the game, is something anybody would love to have under the Christmas tree. We are doing this to promote the Salvation Army. Lee's in town with the Packers from the game yesterday. We've got some folks that made a donation to the Salvation Army to be into our performance studio. And there's a scene in your life that would have been a great scene in the movie. The book tells it well. I'll tell it with you in a minute on WGN. The Agent, Lee Steinberg, you know him as maybe Jerry Maguire from the movie, unless you're one of 300 professional athletes he's represented over the years, and then you know him as the guy that helps you in so many ways, is in our studio. The story about you signing Steve Young, to me, is one of the great stories of the book. Wouldn't you agree?
That was the battle between the NFL and an upstart league, the USFL. And the USFL needed to have a viable franchise in Los Angeles. And to do it, they needed a quarterback that would attract attention. And that was Steve Young. So the two leagues were battling each other. And
that was a great opportunity for you and the athletes then, because right. You could leverage one against the other. If they didn't want to go to the NFL for that amount of money, you could say, we'll go to the USFL. They'll pay us crazy money.
And it's only happened a couple times with the World Football League, with the USFL.
Yeah.
And so it was a unique opportunity. Well, here you have Steve, a good-looking, charismatic, hyper-productive quarterback, and a team in Los Angeles and an area that loves stars, loves flashy stars. So, but they had a wild owner named William Oldenburg.
Who you know as Gordon Gekko.
At any rate.
He's essentially Gordon Gekko.
Well, he was in the savings and loan business, yes, and had a golden gong at the front of his office, which he hit every time he did a $1 million deal. And at any rate, so we were pretty much together on a deal, which was the biggest deal in the history of sports. Dan Rather led the evening news with reports of this deal. It made worldwide headlines. But the night we were going to work on the contract, Steve and I are in his building, and he thinks the contract's going to get done quickly, but it's not.
He wants to celebrate his birthday.
Yes.
His birthday. He's going to be able to announce to the world, I signed. Even though it's my money that's going out, he would love to tell the world he's just made the richest contract offer in the history of sports at a time when $1 million a year was the threshold. You wanted to cross that. You guys had a $42 million deal on the table.
So it takes time to go through all the verbiage.
Oh, sign the damn thing.
Now you're starting to get the dynamic perfectly. And that's how he was.
He said, I've offered you the richest contract in history. It's my birthday. Sign it.
Exactly. And so he's yelling and screaming. At one point, he orders us up to his office as this night progresses. And he starts hitting Steve Young in the chest and says, if you won't take this right now, you're not the effing quarterback that
you're not
I
man
want.
Enough to
right.
run my team.
And then at another point, he starts to throw a chair out of the 15th story window and Steve grabs his hand. Now, Steve is a pale-faced, naive young Mormon kid at this point, and this is his first experience with pro football.
23 years old, maybe.
And Oldenburg knocks a whole set of glasses off the table, and the shards of glass are sticking up. And anyway, so he calls in his security guards.
Well, it's 3 in the morning.
Yes, it's 3:30 in the morning. He calls in his security guards and ushers us out on the streets of San Francisco, and
there you sit.
There we are.
So you guys are kicked out of the place. He's gone bananas through the afternoon.
And the general manager.
Yeah, you, the general manager.
And the general manager, John Klosterman, starts to have a heart attack. Outside of that, it's a normal transaction.
So the next morning, Gordon Gekko's calling, going, okay, I'm really sorry about this. And then who calls but Howard Cosell?
Howard Cosell.
Calls your client because Cosell is with ABC. ABC's going to do the game.
Joe Namath calls. Pete Rozelle calls. Roger Staubach. That calls.
This
is
to happen.
The battle of the titans. They're each lobbying for both sides.
Yeah, right.
NFL versus, and we end up signing the deal. And as I said, Steve, who's got good values, and me, who's trying to run a practice based on role modeling, and we are now representatives of excess materialism run rampant.
Well, that's the way it looks when it's a $42 million deal. We have to break, but the story then finishes, as you tell it in your book, with, okay, so he goes with USFL. He takes the money. He's with the LA Express. You all remember the LA Express? Of course you don't. The team wasn't successful. The league wasn't successful. To the point where, so now he's got $42 million, and a lot of that guaranteed, but fans don't show up, and they finish the second season playing at a junior college. At one point, going to or from a game, the bus driver stops and says, I haven't been paid in weeks. The checks I got have been bouncing. We're not going any further until I get money. And the players all had to reach into their back pocket and give him some cash to continue to drive the bus. That's your $42 million quarterback. We'll pause here for a minute. I want to ask you when we come back. It's not your area of expertise per se. I mean, you're an NFL guy. You're a quarterback guy. But you've represented people in all sports. What advice would you have to Bryce Harper? Because Chicago desperately wants him. Lee Steinberg, after the news, that's around the corner on WGN. We're back from Mexico. It's good to be in Chicago. And our first guest out of the gate this week is Lee Steinberg. His book, The Agent, is subtitled My 40-Year Career, Making Deals and Changing the Game. He was in town yesterday for the Packers game. Some of his guys are on that side of the ball. Nobody under Bears contract right now, huh?
No, but hopefully soon.
There's this guy named Mac. You should really get him. He's really good and tall and strong and angry. He's a really good football player.
Thank you for that tip, John.
Do you want to just slap people sometimes when they go, hey, Aaron Rodgers, why don't you get him?
You know, people will pretend to ask a question and then give me their opinion on sports for the next hour and a half.
Hey, what do you think about the Bears? Because here's what I think. I think the Bears are going to win it all. What do you think?
Thank you.
Also, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Smith, the Metropolitan Divisional Commander, is in our performance studio, too. Charles, so far, so good?
Hey, I think this is great. You know, I told my wife there's nothing like talking about the Salvation Army and also dealing with my favorite thing of dealing with sports. So
well,
this has been a great day.
We're talking in the hall. You know your game a little bit, don't you? Are you a sports fan?
I am indeed. Grew up in Kansas City, so the Kansas City Chiefs are my home team, but that's the AFL. So the NFC, you know, I can go with the Bears for sure.
We want folks to make a donation to the Salvation Army today. Some of the folks in our little audience here have made a donation for that purpose. But you can do it right now to our virtual kettle. Go to WGNradio.com. On the John Williams page, there's me in a Christmas suit. That's the link. Click there. We're going to do a big fundraising effort later in the week, but today's the day to remind you to make that virtual donation to a literal donation on our virtual kettle.
Right.
And that's a good way for people to go now, isn't it?
It is. We've received a substantial increase in digital fundraising takes place right now. However, it's interesting that people still have some cash in their pockets because our kettles on the streets still collect a large portion of cash for us.
I tell people when you go out, like shopping, or if you know you're going to go out into town, wherever your town is, city or suburbs, just grab some ones. you know, or fives or tens, whatever it is that you're comfortable putting in the kettle. But so sometimes you come upon them and it's cold or it's buried in your purse or your coat pocket and you've got gloves on. Have that one, that 10, whatever you want to give ready. And then it's more convenient because sometimes your heart's there, but your fingers aren't. So
true.
Be ready to make the donation.
Well, there's over 1,000 different kettle locations across Chicagoland, and I'm sure that everyone can find a Salvation Army bell ringer somewhere to be able to make that contribution.
So hand the microphone around. We'll let some of the folks ask questions. And Lee, this is a nice sort of segue for you because one of the sort of niches for your practice was, let's not just show you the money, Mr. Jerry Maguire, but we want you guys to have a cause, be more than just an athlete, right?
So my parents raised me with two core values. One was treasure relationships, especially family. And the second was to try to make a meaningful, positive impact in the world and especially help people who can't help themselves. And that fits right in with the Salvation Army that helps the homeless, helps people that are struggling with addiction in some way. In our practice, we ask each athlete to go back to the high school community that helped shape them, set up a scholarship fund, lay down roots, give back. At the collegiate level, set up again a scholarship fund of some sort, reunite with the alums. And at the pro level, one of our first programs, which was a charitable foundation, was the Teddy Bears with Ted Albrecht, who I know works here. And Ted worked with the Shriners Hospital. So we get the leading business figures in the community, the political figures and community leaders all on a board to help with the program. So Warwick Dunn, the former running back, just put the 164th single mother and her family into the first home they'll ever own.
Really?
By making the down payment and then moving the family into a furnished home. But it's athletes making a difference, and messaging makes a difference too. So I had Lennox Lewis, the heavyweight champion, cut a public service announcement that said, "Real men don't hit women." Or Oscar De La Hoya and Steve Young, "Prejudice is foul play." So we're using the high profile of sports to try to make a positive impact. And that's the only real product of our practice, is the effect we have on stimulating the best in young people and then what we together can do for the world.
And that's sort of a message that you got from your dad.
I did.
It's interesting because your grandfather was a well-to-do, famous guy. I mean, the people that populate your life. In college, you talked to Gloria Steinem and Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison. And you, as a kid, had an autographed guitar given to you by Elvis Presley, for crying out loud. And as I'm reading your story, I thought I could see how you would just be an average run-of-the-mill snob. And nobody would blame you for it because you would be the product of that background. But your dad didn't cotton to that. Your dad said, no, I'm not going to go that way. Your dad was a public school administrator, right?
Yes, he was. We were just going through the house the other day, and we found a picture of me on Marilyn Monroe's lap from the days that my grandpa ran Hillcrest Country Club. And Groucho Marx and his granddaughter and I cut a record to the tune from Annie, Get Your Gun, to the tune of Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better.
Do you still have some of these artifacts?
I do.
You still have the guitar from Elvis?
I do. Well, the guitar, of course, we were kids, so it got smashed. But
no.
It. But here's the thing: the greatest art that we ever learned was the skill of listening. So it wasn't suasion; it was being able to draw another human being out and to understand what their deepest anxieties and fears were, and their greatest hopes and dreams. So it's trying to put yourself in the heart and mind of another human being, and so it's not about yourself; it's about what you can do to make a difference in other people's lives.
along that line, there's two topics that I know are near and dear to your heart. One is alcoholism. One is concussions in the NFL. We'll have a few minutes to touch on those topics. You know, that goes back again, doesn't it, Colonel, to if there's a cause that's near and dear to you, the Army's probably working on that right now. I don't know that the Army is soldiering on about concussions, but Lord knows substance abuse is a place where your donation really makes a difference. WGNradio.com, the John Williams page. A minute about that in a moment. But yes, sir, what is your name?
Hi, Jim Corboy. Nice to meet you, Lee, and it's an honor to have you here today. Quick question. I know Cameron Crowe had mentioned the idea of not really ever doing a sequel, but that seems to have opened up again.
Yeah.
The question is, if Tom Cruise wasn't available, would you pick somebody else to play you? And then also, you've had some amazing success stories and triumphs of your own off the field. How much of that of those great successes would be included in a sequel?
So we've had a number of different people try to option the book The Agent. Cameron's not going to make Jerry Maguire 2. He doesn't do sequels. But a number of people have wanted to do this. It's sort of got a Forrest Gumpy spread to it, where you go from Hollywood in the 60s to Berkeley, where I'm student body president, and Ronald Reagan is governor, and we duke it out all the time.
That's going to be a great scene in the movie.
Yeah.
He and Ronald Reagan are having at it, and you're a college punk, and he's the governor. But keep going.
And later we laughed about it, but we were protesting against the war in Vietnam, and he was not happy. But then it goes through 40 years of representing athletes and all the experiences. Different people have suggested Jake Gyllenhaal. Let's see.
To play you now?
Well, it depends what age.
You know? I could see a Kevin Costner. Wouldn't Costner work? Now you're dating him maybe more than he wants. But just one more quick point from you, though. Were you thinking of something in specific when you said his accomplishments other than as a sports guy?
Sure. I mean, there's been a whole lot else that's going on in your life that you've had to sort of deal with, both from family and obviously some personal challenges. And right. it's an even more interesting part of your life story, perhaps, than the first few chapters.
No kidding. I mean, that would be, boy, if the opening scene from Jerry Maguire 2 was you drinking from a plastic bottle of vodka
right.
in your dad's old bedroom, that had to be the low point.
It was. So a series of events. I had a really long, charmed time. And then I had two boys diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, which leads to blindness, and one's legally blind, the other. And I felt so helpless. And we lost a home to mold. And then my father died from cancer. And I've always been good if I feel like I can solve things and can get out there and fight. I don't have to win everything. If I can do it. And I felt so overwhelmed, and I turned to the wrong thing. I turned to alcohol. And before I knew it, I hadn't been an alcoholic my whole life, but I got there pretty quick. And I found myself giving my practice over to the younger agents and alienated from one of my sons. And I finally had an epiphany that I wasn't a starving peasant in, Biafra. I wasn't, didn't have the last name Steinberg in Nazi Germany, and I didn't have cancer. And what excuse did I have not to be this? And so I vowed, if I never did anything professionally again, I'd be a good father and I would be sober. And so, I got into a 12-step program. I went through everything that anybody had ever done to get sober. I did. And, in March I'll be 9 years continuously sober. All the things have come back, and we've got the hottest player in pro football now with Patrick Mahomes, and about ready to start a podcast and all that. But the real key to it is being a good father and the fact I'm able to maintain sobriety. And the Salvation Army helps people who fall off, and you never know until it happens to you how it can happen. If there are people out there listening who are hopeless, who feel challenged, so was I, and there's help available, 12-step programs and people who will assist you.
WGNradio.com, the John Williams page. There's the link there where I'm wearing my Christmas suit. You can make a donation now. Talk to me about concussions after this. Lee Steinberg, the agent on WGN. Super agent Lee Steinberg is here. His book is called The Agent. He was the guy that they were thinking of when they did the movie with Tom Cruise called Jerry Maguire. You make two different references in the book, and the movie talks about it ever so briefly in the beginning, the business of concussions. It's a bigger issue now than when the movie was made, and for that matter, when you first wrote this book. What's the NFL going to do, or what can they do about this?
I had a crisis of conscience back in the 80s because I'm representing half the starting quarterbacks in the NFL. They keep getting hit in the head, and no doctor can tell me how many is too many and what the long-term consequences are. So I started holding concussion conferences, and we got the leading neurologists from across the country. And what we found out is that three or more concussions occasion an exponentially higher rate of Alzheimer's, premature senility, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and depression. So I've called it a ticking time bomb and an undiagnosed health epidemic.
So what?
So the truth of the matter is every time a lineman hits a lineman at the line of scrimmage, it produces a low-level subconcussive event. So a lineman can walk out of football with 10,000 of them, none of which have been diagnosed. So we urgently need better helmetry, better enforcement of rules to not block or tackle with the head, better real-time diagnosis.
They're just trying that. It's complicated, isn't it?
They've tried it. The basic play of the game produces head injury. So that's the reality of it.
Should we get rid of football?
No, I think there are ways to make it safer, and the best part about this is there's a profit motive now, and so it brings engineering into the mix with helmetry. It brings science into the mix with ways to heal the brain prophylactically to protect it or to heal it after it's been done.
We got a minute left. What should Bryce Harper do?
Sign with the White Sox. Well, here's the thing. The White Sox have been down, and you got the third largest city in the country, and you've got the chance to bring that team back in a beloved way. And the thing about Chicago is it's the next telling you the way an agent thinks. It's a nexus of all these massive corporations. So you're going to do big endorsement stuff. And you got Superstation and all that.
Sure, but I mean, if you were his agent, and you're not, but wouldn't you want him to go to either a more established team or to a team in a market that is the first team? The White Sox are the second baseball team in Chicago. What do you are those hurdles that the White Sox can overcome?
Yes, absolutely, because winning changes everything. And when you start to win, it changes the total dynamics. So if they can sell him on the fact that his addition and whatever their plan is for building can be a winning one. Yeah. They would have to be able to make that argument. But we've seen teams, the Cubs were perennial losers, and it's all about your ownership, your front office, and the plan. And the players go round and round.
I've got the feeling they do have a plan, and I think they're wisely coaching patience. We're going to have to wait another year for Michael Kopech to heal anyway, so we're going to be patient. How much money would you ask if you were representing him? He's walking away from $300.
It's really the term that is the hang-up. Anybody will pay him $30 million a year. He's probably got 10 suitors who'll do that. Will you guarantee for skill and injury 10 years? And he's 26, so it's only till he's 36, but it is till he's 36. And if anything happened to him, if he gets injured, if he diminishes in skill, then you're on the hook for all those later guaranteed years.
Well, whose side are you on?
That's the dynamic.
That's you representing the player.
Well, Albert Pujols is with the Angels, where I live in Newport Beach, and he is on the downturn of his career, and they have four more guaranteed years.
At what?
$30 million.
Okay. Well, that's fun. We're out of time. Lee Steinberg's The Agent is the book. Jerry Maguire is the movie, somewhat based on him. He's still out there representing starting quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. Few of his players were in town for the Packers game yesterday. Come by our studio again next time you're in Kansas
City. I'd love to, and I hope listeners will think about the Salvation Army and how to help people who are in need.
Friends of ours from the Salvation Army, including Lieutenant Colonel Charles Smith, are here. Charles, I'm glad you could make it as well. Make that donation to the Army right now. That's what this hour's been about. In part, well, that's really why we've been here. Maybe I haven't plugged this enough. Go to WGNradio.com, click on the John Williams page, look for me in a Christmas suit, make that donation right now.